Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Kramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Kramerica. Other people want to make friends. I'm just trying to make you some money. My job's not just to entertain you, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. If I had to sum up this market in a word, I'd call it extremist. We rush from one extreme to the other, sometimes in the same day, including this one. With the Dow gaining 198 points, the S&P advanced 0.48%, the NASDAQ declined 0.01%. What do I mean by extremism? Stock extremism? Okay, at the opening this morning, we saw a screaming NASDAQ rally based solely on the strength in one stock, Alphabet. There was no other reason for that index to be running. While the NASDAQ partied, we got some truly hideous action in the big industrials, in part because the president praised tariffs, and most of these companies are being hurt by tariffs, and in part because many traders made up their minds that things weren't so hot before they even knew what the industrials were going to say. Two glaring examples, 3M and Salesforce.com. Before the get-go, that's right, before even the opening bell, 3M stock got slammed after reported really what I thought was a better-than-expected quarter. The culprit? There was none. Company doubled its organic growth, saw strength in almost every business line, and managed to reverse some of the sickening declines it experienced in the previous quarter. This was a dramatic turnaround, and it really called into question the bearish narrative that's been developing ever since Inge Thulin announced his retirement as CEO and Michael Roman took the helm. No matter, the stock opened at its yearly low, crashing down to $190. That's off $8 from yesterday. It was simply hideous. I struggled when I did my mad dash with David Faber because I'd poured up and down the release. I just couldn't find out what the heck was wrong. I said it was an overreaction to a misunderstood quarter that was definitively better than anyone I know was looking for. Was it perfect? Some of the gains came from an incredibly aggressive buyback, which moved the needle on the bottom line. There were some one-time positives that really did distort the earnings per share, too. But I kept looking and looking and looking to see what people hated, given that the stock had already lost 19% for the year, and I couldn't see it. Turns out I really did miss nothing. 3M was simply too hated. As the conference call proceeded, the stock started ramping furiously, and it only closed up $1.84. Up! That's more than a 10-point swing. Now, that's what I call extremism. Or to put it another way, the morons who sold 3M down refused to wait for the conference call to hear how the company was really doing. Sure, there was a subtle guide down from the top of the range for the full-year forecast, but what mattered was an incredibly strong return to organic growth. That's the metric we were all looking for, which is why the stock ended up bouncing so hard. Now, with Salesforce, we see the reverse. Unlike the hobbled 3M, this stock was coming in hot, up more than 44% for the year, and it opened with a bang, a gain of more than a point to its all-time high. But it was on absolutely no news. Ironically, Stiefel put out a note this morning entitled, "We'll be pigs, Kent!" That's a reference to a line in the hilarious European Vacation about how it's okay to buy up here. It's okay to be a pig. That analyst told us that while buyers should be aware of lofty levels in tech stocks, he then says, as I quote, as it relates to digital disruptors and the ultimate beneficiaries of enterprise digital transformations, we think investors absolutely have to own Salesforce, end quote. Now, I agree with Stiefel, which is why we own Salesforce for my charitable trust. However, the note happened to come out on what we call a reversal day, so to speak, where the industrials got dumped at the opening and the Nasdaq soared. Salesforce stock opening up at its all-time high, gaining more than a dollar before doing a stunning pirouette and going into the red. Yep, lagging industrial 3M sees its stock get pummeled to its yearly low before blasting off.
All aboard!
While Salesforce.com opens at its all-time high before plunging into the abyss, along with most of its Cloud King compadres. What gives? How can 3M get crushed and then crush it while Salesforce comes out strong and then takes it on the chin? You know what? You can blame the macro. You can blame the headlines, but don't blame the companies. What we saw this morning was an overly exuberant NASDAQ. Remember, it only finished virtually unchanged, relying on the fantastic numbers from Alphabet to pull up the whole index. As you'll hear later, I thought Alphabet gave you a green light to buy Alphabet, and perhaps even Amazon, because of the cloud similarities, but not much else. I guess you could say what's good for Google is good for Google. 3M, on the other hand, was buoyed not just truly by a truly better-than-expected quarter, because there were no expectations, but also by a belief that maybe the global economy is accelerating. I know Wall Street has given up on China as a source of growth because of trade friction, but last night the PRC injected some serious stimulus into its economy, something that will indeed help the likes of 3M and United Technologies, which also put up a terrific quarter that was initially dismissed by the market and then embraced, another example of extremism. And it's not just Chinese stimulus. The commodities markets have been gotten, they're just red hot. Including the red metal, copper, which is often used as a proxy for worldwide growth. The Baltic Freight Index, a measure of shipping that is used as a proxy for Chinese growth, roared ahead, too. When you get commodities higher and China stronger, money managers crack open their playbook, which says to sell the highest growth stocks and buy the industrials, which is exactly what happened. Now, interest rates have been going higher because of this of commodity inflation, and that allowed the bank stocks to rally once again. We also got a nifty number from Eli Lilly and a strong one from Biogen. That lifted both the drugs and the biotechs. Still, though, the session was dominated by the money flowing into the techs and out of the industrials in the morning, and then out of the non-FANG techs and into the industrials for the rest of the day. Done as surely as the tides go in and out, something that's natural when it comes to the ocean, but insane when it comes to stocks. So how do you navigate your way through such a crazy environment? Simple. Like I said last night, individual stocks still do matter. But the corollary is that individual stocks don't have the kind of pin action, even the drugs like I just mentioned, they don't have that kind of pin action like they used to. Because ETFs have less power to drag entire sectors to and fro for the whole session. It's absolutely true that Alphabet had an amazing quarter. But that doesn't mean you should buy all things tech, even though that's exactly what happened at the opening. It's absolutely true that 3M had a good quarter, not a bad one. But the selling of 3M knocked down almost all the industrials. When investors figured out that 3M is doing just fine, they took the whole group higher. But again, there was little staying power for the whole panoply, especially for the ones that haven't reported yet. The bottom line, the moral of the story is that the extremes have to be avoided. Don't buy up. Don't chase when there's nothing but rampant pin action like we saw in the case with Alphabet. Don't sell down when there's nothing wrong. And by the way, if you haven't even heard the conference call, which is what happened to 3M, I mean, you're just being silly. In fact, here's a radical idea for everyone who dumped the industrials this morning. Maybe try to figure out what's going on before you take action. Otherwise, what you should do is you probably should take your bat and your ball and your scotch tape and then go home. Let's go to Neil in Alabama. Neil!
Booyah, Jan, and Roll Tide!
Holy cow! Oh, man, hey. I think that was a youngin'.
Hey.
What's up?
Hey, Jim, Neil Fettner from Alabama.
Good
that was my
you.
Son, Walker. He's been on Mad. He's been a Mad Money fan since he was 18 months old. Every day when I came home from work, he used to say, we're going to watch Sell Sale today, because that's what he used to call your show. But on a more serious note, I want to ask you, what about this new hot stock called Tilray, ticker symbol T-I-L-R-Y, The stock exploded last week after its IPO on Thursday. It's been up big, but it's starting to pull back. What should I do?
It went too crazy. This is a pot stock, medicinal marijuana. I think the better one is GW Pharma. You know, I like Canopy, too. The group gets hot. It gets cold. It gets hot. It gets cold. But remember, it was up huge from where it came. And now it's just simple profit taking. I like to own a portfolio of marijuana stocks, not just one. Let's go to Carol in Florida. Carol.
This call makes my day. I'm calling about Synchrony Financial, S-Y-N.
Sure, Synchrony.
Which will be reporting second quarter earnings on Friday. I'm interested in your thoughts on the relationship between PayPal and Synchrony, since Synchrony recently acquired PayPal's consumer credit portfolio. How does this enhance Synchrony's position?
Well, I'll tell you, Carol, that Synchrony wants volume. And that gave him some volume, gave him some heft. I think Synchrony's okay, but you know, I've been a huge fan of PayPal and Dan Schulman. Now, the stock's up a couple today because we saw some Dan Loeb, who's an activist, say that he thinks the stock can go up big from here. That's not a reason to own the stock, but PayPal is my fave, and my Chapel Trust, which you can follow along by joining the ActionAlertsPlus.com club, is the way to get the information. Tom in Indiana. Tom!
Yes, Mr. Kramer, how are you today?
I am good. How about you, sir?
I'm great. Thank you. Hey, here's my question. I own stock currently in Dominion Energy. And, of course, there's also Dominion Midstream Partners, which is DM.
Right.
Would Dominion Midstream Partners also be a company worth acquiring stock in as well?
I don't think it's bad. I think that it's down almost 50%. It's not that low quality. We got a FERC modification rule that really hurt the group of the Mass Limited Partnerships. I don't think it's a bad bet here, but I've got to tell you, you know, I've soured on that group, but this thing's just gotten too cheap. I do like letter D very much. They're involved in the difficult acquisition with South Carolina that has kept that stock back. All right. Avoid the extremes, people. You saw what happened today with the stocks of 3M and Salesforce. It's essential to figure out what's going on before you take any action. Is that so hard? Oh, man, tonight, the S&P 500 is within a stone's throw of its all-time high set back in January. So could we see a similar swoon that we saw in early February? I'm going to tackle the technicals to find out. Then, not even a $5 billion fine can slow down the stock of Alphabet, all-time highs. I'll tell you why investors could continue to go gaga over Google. And it's been one of my favorite healthcare plays for ages, and the stock continues to rally after earnings until, well, let's just say, let's find out what's going on. Could Danner have more room to run, or is it stalled again? I'm giving you my take. So stick with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag mad tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com. Carl Quintanilla, Morgan Brennan, John Fort, Squawk Alley, 11 Eastern, CNBC.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact. Smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com to start saving.
After the recent rally, you know, this has been a pretty good month. Market's almost done clawing its way back to the all-time highs we set back in January for that big sell-off. So how exactly should we feel about these levels? Isn't that incredibly important? I mean, could the S&P 500 be preparing to break out to new highs? Will it be smooth sailing? Or is it time to be afraid? Because we could be in for another February-style swoon, something I cannot let happen again. Got to be prepared. So to answer that question, we're going to go off the charts with Mark Sebastian. He's a brilliant technician. He's the founder of OptionPit.com, as well as being my colleague at RealMoney.com. He's our resident expert on the Volatility Index, the VIX for short, also known as the Fear Gauge. And so far this year, it's been a darn good predictor of where the averages might be headed. Just a reminder, the VIX works by measuring the implied volatility of S&P 500 options over the next month. How do options measure volatility? Well, a lot of investors like to buy puts and calls as a kind of insurance against wild swings in the market. So when they expect a lot of volatility, the price of that insurance goes up. That's why Sebastian's methodology, comparing the action in the VIX to the action in the broader stock market, has worked so well for us on the show. Now let's get to the major issue. Using that methodology, how similar this moment to where we were in January, last time we got up at these levels, when the market was roaring higher and everything was sunshine and rainbows right before we walked into one of the worst downturns in ages. Okay, take a look at these two daily charts of the S&P 500 and the Volatility Index going back to the beginning of the year. Focus right here on this part. Now, before we get into this, remember that in a healthy market, the VIX and the S&P should not be moving in the same direction at the same time. During a rally, you want the VIX to be going down. I mean, it's called the fear gauge for a reason, right? When the VIX and the S&P are climbing at the same time, this is a sign that something could be very, very wrong. And when the VIX and the S&P are both falling, that tells you a bottom might soon be at hand. A falling stock market where people feel less afraid is a good sign. The stocks could be done going down. A bottom. So what did happen in January? Sebastian points out that as the S&P was hitting new highs, this was that great period that we were all so bullish about, right? The volatility index was also rallying. Wait a second. That's the opposite of what we wanted to see. Or as Sebastian puts it, when the S&P and the VIX have a strong positive correlation, that's a real bad sign for the market because they never stay correlated for long. Something has to give. Either the VIX goes back down or the S&P plummets. Sure enough, in late January, this relationship went back to normal as the S&P tanked and the VIX spiked, just like it's supposed to during a major sell-off. So it played out in form. Sebastian says that most of the time when the VIX and the S&P are trading together, the VIX turns out to be right and the S&P turns out to be wrong. In short, the rally in the volatility index back in January was a major red flag. He told us it signaled a brutal impending sell-off that very few people saw coming. So how about right now? Is this analogous? Do we have to worry? Let's move over to the right side of the chart. Does this current situation look anything like January before the big breakdown? Well, since June 27th, the S&P is up 120 points, almost a 5% gain in less than a month. Nice action. And what has the VIX done over this period? Well, precisely what it should. It went down from 18 to 12. In short, the VIX and the market are moving in opposite directions from what we saw here. It's the opposite of that, okay? Sebastian says it's a very bullish sign. Unlike in January when the market was getting nervous about the rally, even the stocks kept climbing, traders are not racing to buy put options to protect themselves against wild swings here. Just the opposite. They're expecting a lot less volatility, not more volatility. In other words, this chart tells Sebastian that the smart money believes in this rally. The kind of big institutional money managers who use options as insurance like what they see. Now, obviously, if we start seeing some very disappointing earnings reports, this backdrop could get real negative real fast. But so far, the earnings have been darn good, including today. But, and this is important, according to Sebastian, we almost never see the VIX plummeting like this as we head into the most densely packed part of earnings season. When you have a ton of huge companies all reporting at once, things do tend to get kind of, well, volatile. So the action here is kind of weird, although not necessarily in a bad way. In January, the VIX spiked going into earnings, even if a lot of that had to do with the market's epic sell-off. Going into earnings season in April, the VIX also spiked. Although, once we started seeing the numbers, investors calmed down and the VIX pulled back. This time, we saw an actual decline in the volatility index, and that decline continues. On the surface, Sebastian thinks it's a pretty positive development. What about beneath the surface, though? Okay, let's go to another chart that can really show you something. Take a look at these. The normal volatility index, okay, the VIX, And the VIX, well, that's what it, VVIX, which measures the volatility of the VIX itself. If you can remember anything from calculus class, think of it as a derivative of the VIX. What does Sebastian make of this picture? While the VIX certainly isn't popping here, the fact is it's still holding near 100. It's a sign that VIX traders themselves are still a bit wary. While the volatility index has come down dramatically, the VIX has been pretty steady. So what does this mean? All right, Sebastian says that if the VIX does go below 12 for a few days, but this VIX fails to go back to 90 or even lower, that could be a warning sign. Why? Because it would imply that volatility will be going back up. And if the VIX does start to rally along with the S&P 500, then we know that's not a good sign, right? In short, if the VIX keeps going lower, but the VIX doesn't come down with it, Sebastian thinks you should expect some choppiness in the stock market, maybe yet a painful month of August. Although, to be totally clear, it hasn't happened yet. It's just something he wants to look out for. At the moment, both the volatility index and the VIX are painting a positive picture. What does this leave us? Here's the bottom line. The charts, as interpreted by Mark Sebastian, suggest that unlike what happened in January, the S&P 500 is headed still higher. He thinks we could be making new all-time highs by the end of earnings season, and he wouldn't be surprised if we get a second-half rally that takes the S&P to 2,900, maybe even 3,000. With some kind of positive resolution on tariffs and trade. That's how much he likes what's going on with the VIX versus the S&P. In my view, based on what we're hearing so far this earnings season, I think he's got a point. But given the recent run, I am watching the VIX like a hawk for any signs like we got going into late January, because, wow, that peak and that February bruising, we got to spot that before it happens. All right, much more Mad Money ahead. Alphabet may hold the answer to why the naysayers have been so wrong about the FANG stocks. I'll reveal it just ahead. And how does a stalled market darling get its groove back? I'm giving you a case study in Danaher. And Centene appeared to report a pretty solid quarter today, right? But the stock still took a hit. Is it a red flag? Or maybe it's the long-awaited buying opportunity. I'm talking with the CEO. So stick with Cramer.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
About halfway through Alphabet's conference call last night, smack in the middle of the Q&A, I had an epiphany. I realized why naysayers have been so wrong about FANG. It hit me when CEO Sundar Pichai was asked about the uses of Google and how pervasive the company's products have become in our daily lives. He said, and I love this, that the uses are vast, and he offered a very simple credo, and I quote, "We want Google to be the source you think of when you run into a problem," end quote. Now, that's it. That's a pretty ambitious manifesto, isn't it? I mean, after all, who hasn't run into problems? Who wouldn't want an unbiased, trusted source to help us solve those problems? It's universal. We're talking all 7 billion people on Earth, or at least the ones with internet access, a number that's growing by the day. And that's exactly the addressable market that Google's shooting for. Think about it. Who hasn't gotten lost? Google Maps is there, having just added 110 million algorithmically drawn buildings onto their maps this year alone. Who hasn't been in a foreign country and had no idea how to ask a question? Google Translators got your back with some explosive use, by the way, during the World Cup. Who hasn't tried and failed to remember something? Google has the answers. The answers for 7 billion people. Think about that. How many companies besides Alphabet can claim they have billions of people worldwide clamoring for their wares? I'll tell you how many others. Three. Facebook, Amazon, and Netflix. That's who. Each of those solves a particular problem in a particularly digital way. Amazon solves the problem of getting you a product where and when you want it. Netflix solves the problem of entertainment worldwide by going direct to the consumer via the internet. And Facebook solves a problem you didn't even know you had, the problem of self-expression and keeping in touch via that self-expression. It's not identity theft, it's identity creation. Almost every other company I follow has limits. They're either tapped out geographically or are facing incredible competition. It's always zero sum. There's always someone else. Even Apple suffers from vicious competition. But is there really a serious competitor to search in online retail and social media and high-quality streaming content? While Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Alphabet, formerly Google, may not be exactly monopolies, it might be fair to call them mindshare monopolies. Alphabet in particular has so many different product lines where it's pulling away from the competition that you have to ask yourself, do we really need to be worried about what they're paying to bring in new customers if they're the only game in town? I think the costs have gone up simply because that's what happens when you go from desktop to mobile. They aren't running out of demand. It's just that mobile is more expensive to dominate. Anybody who's worried about subscriber acquisition costs or perhaps a $5.1 billion fine for the EU? Missing the point. It's only in the cloud that there are real competitors, namely from Amazon, Microsoft, and IBM. But cloud adoption is so early that Pichai said, and I quote, I do think that there is an inflection point, and that's why it feels far from a zero-sum game, end quote. They're spending like mad on data centers to meet demand. That's the kind of spending I can live with. On top of that, Alphabet's Waymo autonomous driving platform is way ahead of anyone else in that category. You judge that by commercial miles driven. Hey, they've done 8 million miles. It wasn't that long ago that skeptics were predicting the collapse of YouTube because advertisers were up in arms about their content appearing next to scatological nonsense. Didn't come up. Not a factor anymore. And Android just gets stronger and stronger despite government intervention in Europe. So are you late to the Google party now, even up 47 points today or almost 4% to an all-time high? No, I don't think so. Why not? As excellent CFO Ruth Porat told us, and I quote, 90% of commerce is still offline, and we do see a great opportunity for digital to play a bigger role, end quote. If a company's only 10% into its total addressable market, you call it early, which is why, even though Alphabet has an $870 billion market cap, I still think it's got room to run. And this, by the way, was the best conference call they've ever done. So before you chastise me for saying Alphabet and these other FANG stocks deserve to be higher, remember, if they solve problems for the whole world and they can create value for billions more people, then we should stop wondering if the stocks are too high and start asking ourselves if they're too low. Bob in Florida, Bob.
Booyah, Jim, and it's thanks for taking my call.
Of course. How can I help?
I have a question about Baidu, ticker symbol BIDU. They're reporting earnings at the end of this month, and I was wondering, should I buy it before or after they report, or don't buy it at all?
Okay, we don't really play the earnings game on the show, as you know, because you're a constant listener, but I would say you can do half of it, and then maybe half after. I'm not trying to game the quarter. I am trying to tell you that Baidu and Alibaba are the only two Chinese stocks that I recommend other than Baozun, which has now moved too much, and I think that you can buy them with great confidence. Let's go to Ben in Massachusetts. Ben!
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Of course.
So I just wanted to talk about Oracle real quick. They beat their numbers by a good margin at the end of last quarter, but there was also a pretty negative reaction to their new reporting format. Since then, we've seen the stock come back to roughly the same levels, and I think that there's still plenty of upside. Do you think that this rebound was a signal that that dip was an overreaction?
Yeah, I don't know, Ben. I know that Mark Hurd called it a nothing burger on the conference call right at the end. I thought it was significant because I like to know how cloud's growing, and I think it was a red flag. And I'm not going to back away from that, and I think that you do not want to own the stock of Oracle. John in Alabama. John!
Hey, Jim, a big roll tide booyah to you. Are you ready for some football?
You bet I am, and I love Bama football. What's happening?
Hey, I'm calling about BlackBerry. They were king of the hill back in the early 2000s. Their stock was going for about 150 a share. I guess around 2006, Apple kicked them to the curb hard and fast with the iPhone.
Right.
But they've got a new software and services division now. It's been growing at about 15% a year the last 3 years, sales of almost $800 million the last year. They're doing deals with Qualcomm, NVIDIA, Baidu, and Samsung. Do you think they're poised for a comeback, Jim?
You know what I thought, John? You know, I've been on the comeback bandwagon since the mid-single digits. That last quarter was not stellar, and that brought the stock back to earth. But I'm with you. I think there's money, there's value here. I would not sell it. Google wants to solve all of your problems, and that's why it continues to lead itself higher, along with the rest of FANG. There's much more Mad Money ahead. I'm telling you how Danaher's decision to spin off its lackluster dental business could leave investors smiling. Then Centene's up a whopping 340% over the past 5 years. But could today's drop push pause on the move? I got to tell you, I'm not sure. Let's talk to the CEO. And all your calls, rapid fire, tonight's edition of The Lightning Round. So stick with Cramer.
Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
Tariffs are the greatest.
The greatest?
Not Muhammad Ali.
No, no.
Tariffs.
Ali's been replaced.
Goat. Right? The greatest of all tariffs.
Yes.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Every now and then, a really high-quality stock with a stunning track record of delivering long-term gains will stall out for a period of months, or maybe even years. Even the best-run companies in the world can't always translate their strength into higher stock prices, and they'll fall out of style on the Wall Street fashion show. So how does a stalled market darling get its groove back? Let's consider the case of Danaher. DHR, the life sciences, diagnostics, and environmental technology play. Over the past few decades, Danaher has been perhaps the single best conglomerate on earth. Ask anyone in the business, and you say, what's a good conglomerate? They're almost always going to come back and say Danaher. There was a time when people talked about this company as the second coming of Berkshire Hathaway. And listen, I'm still a huge fan of Danaher, and that's why we own it for my charitable trust, which you can follow along with by joining the ActionAlertsPlus.com club. In recent years, though, the company's going through a major transformation. The old Danaher was a lot less focused, but in 2016, they spun off their many different industrial divisions as a whole new company called Fortiv. Since then, both stocks have given you some remarkable gains. This is yet another reason why I'm such a big fan of breakups. While investors were always willing to give the old Danaher the benefit of the doubt, it's just that well-run the fact is that conglomerates pay a penalty when they're too diversified. Why? Because very few investors actually want to own some amalgamation of a healthcare company and an industrial. Those two groups often trade in opposite directions. When the economy is roaring, money managers prefer to swap out of the slow and steady healthcares and buy the cyclical industrial stocks that can produce enormous gains during a major economic expansion. But when the economy slows down, these same institutional fund managers swap out of the industrials and move their money back into the defense of healthcare stocks that tend to do just fine in a recession. You know what that means? It meant that the old Danaher was often pulled in two different directions. So the company split itself up rather than have this thing where it was constantly
come and split,
two different pieces, much easier to understand. Danaher got the slow and steady businesses, and Fortiv got the cyclical ones. Sure enough, that move unlocked a ton of value, especially at Fortiv, as the economy quickly went into overdrive. It was perfect for Fortiv. But it's also been good for Danaher, because as a healthcare and environmental technology play, it had a much larger constituency on Wall Street. However, after years of outperformance, Danaher's stock stalled out earlier this year. After rallying to 103 in January, the stock pulled back to the mid-90s and then spent the next 6 months basically trading sideways. The darn thing couldn't get any traction. Why? It started when the company reported a good quarter at the end of January, but also gave you some mildly disappointing guidance. And even mild disappointments are not what investors have come to expect from a company that's as well-managed as Danaher. By the way, they never talk, they're never promotional, they just keep grinding it out. So the stock pulled back a bit, and then it got hit even harder by the market-wide sell-off that crushed everything in early February. But, and this is a big but, we started to see some truly worrying signs in the spring. For starters, Danaher pre-announced some positive numbers. telling us that the first quarter results will be above the high end of the previous guidance, thanks to strength in their diagnostics and life sciences division. Hey, great, right? Well, while the stock initially bounced, it quickly gave back those gains as investors freaked out about the impact of President Trump's new tariffs, because Danaher does a lot of business overseas. Then in April, Danaher reports an excellent beat and raise quarter, right? Even better than the pre-announcement. But the stock barely bats an eyelash. It's like nobody cared. Why is that? What made investors give up on the company? Well, the only bad thing here, the one problematic division, was Danaher's dental business. The company's life sciences, diagnostic, and environmental segments all grew by anywhere from 12.5 to 14%. Those are nice, consistent growers. You also saw some hefty margin expansion from life sciences and diagnostics. Oh, boy, does the market love those two. But dental was a whole nother story. See, the whole dental industry has been getting hammered lately, and Danaher Dental saw its sales grow by just 2.5%. It would have been down 3% without the impact of currency fluctuations. Plus, their dental margins experienced some massive declines. So dental has been the albatross around Danaher's neck, even as management remained adamant that this business would start to turn the corner later this year, maybe 2019. The other issue, China. Danaher gets more than 10% of its sales from mainland China, and there are concerns that the company could get caught in the crossfire if the trade wars keep escalating. Although, honestly, I doubt the Chinese Communist Party is dumb enough to slap tariffs on Danaher's medical equipment. Still, the stock was stuck in a rut. Between the drag from dental and the China worries, Danaher's shares couldn't get any lift. And I've got to tell you, I used to dread watching the release to see how bad the dental line was. It just kept hurting everybody. We had Henry Schein, remember? The dental line was tough. Well, I was worried, that is, until last Thursday, when the company reported an excellent quarter, but also told us heavenly about plans to spin off the problematic dental business, which combined to send the stock soaring 4.5% in a single session. Environmental diagnostics and life sciences all remain strong. And I have to admit, dental improved substantially, 2% core growth, thanks to a pickup in the sales of consumables and equipment for the first time since 2016. Of course, the real positive here, though, is that they're spinning off the dental biz. Separate company, second half of next year. Danaher is confident that it will perform better as a standalone company. They can gobble up competitors via acquisitions. In fact, management even likened the dental spinoff to the Fortive spinoff, which was a big win for both Fortive shareholders and Danaher's. But there was more to it than good numbers and getting rid of the dental albatross. On the conference call, Danaher addressed the worries about tariffs and trade. CFO Daniel Comas explained that, at least so far, the tariffs that have been imposed will cost this company maybe a penny per quarter, mostly because their components have become a bit more expensive. But he then went on to tell us that the company is doing everything it can to minimize the impact by changing the supply chain or seeking exemptions or moving their manufacturing. In response, the analyst gushed about the quarter. Suddenly, the two biggest overhangs have been either removed or alleviated. People could finally focus on the actual numbers again. Remember, the previous quarter, Danaher also gave you great numbers, but nobody cared because of China and dental. Now it appears that the China impact is both minimal and manageable, and dental will soon be no longer part of the company, and I won't have to fear when the release comes out, as I have for so long. Think of it as addition by subtraction. Danaher's diagnostics, life sciences, environmental divisions, they're all double-digit growers, solid margin expansion. They're what investors want to own, not that beleaguered dental business. And look, given the company's track record, you have to believe in Danaher's ability to unlock value by breaking itself up. It's what they do. Nobody thought that Fortive would be a huge winner when it was spun off in 2016. Well, not everybody. We liked it on the show. Turned out to be an even better performer than Danaher itself. When it comes to value creation, these guys know what they're doing. Even better, I think management's guidance was still conservative, which means they'll probably be able to beat the numbers next time, too. Now, with the stock trading 21 times next year's estimates, I think it's still a buy, given the consistency and the acceleration of the numbers. And even for this recent bounce, I would scoop some up. Bottom line, Danaher is doing everything it needs to generate higher stock prices, which is why I think this baby has more room to run. Without dental to worry about, with the tariffs looking manageable, this already terrific story is suddenly looking a heck of a lot better. Mad Money's back after the break. It is time! Start the labor principles of Ralph Goes Over the Edge. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skid? That's over the lightning round. Question. Let's start with Greg in New Hampshire. Greg.
Yes. How you doing, Jim? Thanks for taking my call. My question is, it's a stock that's been on a tear for the last 52 weeks. It started off at about 20. It's now trading at like $80. I'm wondering if I've missed my buying opportunity. The stock is WWE.
You know, I actually think you may not have. I mean, it was Strauss Zelnick who explained this because he runs Take-Two about how compelling this business model is. And don't forget, they're also a subscription business, so I have to say, no, you haven't. I buy half and then see if it comes in. Let's go to Broad in New York. Broad.
Jim, talk to me. Hey, what do you see on Wolverine Worldwide?
I like the whole apparel business. I like the footwear business. That stock is pretty close to its high. I prefer Nike over it. Let's go to Don in Kentucky. Don.
Hey, Jim, how are you, man? Thanks for taking my call.
Quite welcome.
I'm calling you about KHC. I bought it at 76. It went up to 90, and it just fell back. And what should I do?
Well, they need to make a deal. Meantime, I cannot count on selling it this low. It did go a little bit lower than this. I think the company's trying to get religion about growth. And if they try to get religion about growth, then the stock can go forward, or they can make an acquisition and the stock will go higher. Rick in Florida. Rick.
Hi, Jim.
Rick, what's up?
I'm interested in getting into some oil. Possibly, I'm looking at the Royal Dutch Shell RDSB shares, $70 a share with 5.2% dividend versus Chevron, 123 share, 3.69.
But may I say, let's put another one in the mix. I'd like BP. We're telling the people who are members of the ActionAlertsPlus.com club that BP with a 5% yield actually has more growth than even Royal Dutch. That's the one I would go with. Tom in Colorado. Tom.
Hey, Jim, booyah from the Rockies. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Twofold question. Why are consumer staples lagging the market? And one of those stocks is Coca-Cola.
Okay. The reason why they're lagging the market is they haven't been able to show a lot of growth. Coca-Cola is actually on a growth path. It's doing a little bit better. They're about to report. I think that Quincy's doing a good job. And I think it's slow and steady. Does, let's say, come in place in the race. Not show, but not win. Let's go to Gus in New York. Gus.
Hey, booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
Okay, I'd like to know your advice on the Scott Miracle-Gro.
Well, Scott Miracle-Gro
company.
You know what I feel about Scott? They keep screwing it up. And therefore, I think that it's absolutely right that it's lower. And you know what? I know people are playing as a pot play. We got real pot plays now. And the one that I still like is GW Pharma. But I also think Canopy's good, and, you know, I'm keeping track of the whole group. Let's go to Alan in New Jersey. Alan.
Booyah, Jim, from the Garden and Mall State. How are you today?
I am doing good. How about you?
Excellent. I'm a longtime listener and a first-time caller. My question for today is a recent IPO, Columbia Savings Bank, here in New Jersey.
You know, look, these often do very well. You have to look at them at a price to book value, and I'm not sure what the price to book value is, but I will say this. We got JP Morgan selling so cheap. Why do we have to go down and buy a little bag? JP Morgan's the best. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
Okay, what the heck happened just to the stock of Centene? For those of you who don't remember, Centene is one of my favorites. It's a health plan provider that gets most of its business from government-sponsored programs like Medicare and Medicaid. Its stock has been red hot. It's given us a 342% gain over the past 5 years. It's up a quick 35% year-to-date coming into the session. Then the company reported this morning, Wall Street was less than pleased, with the stock pulling back $6 or 4.5% today. What happened? While Centene posted a top and bottom line beat, and they even modestly raised their full-year earnings guidance, apparently it wasn't enough. The problem? Okay, the company had fewer managed care members than the analysts were expecting, and their health benefits ratio, the percentage of the premiums that they spent on medical care, came in at 85.7, and that was 30 basis points below what people were whispering about. Plus, there was also a small increase in sales, general, and administrative expenses related to the Obamacare exchanges. If all that sounds like quibbling with a very strong quarter, I get it. But remember, the stock had run up pretty dramatically in earnings. I think it's probably just a garden variety sell-off, and there's a lot to look forward to here thanks to Centene's recent acquisition of Fidelis, the nation's largest Medicaid managed care provider. But let's kick the tires a bit and check in with Michael Notov. He's the chairman and CEO of Centene. Find out more about the quarter and where his company's headed. Mr. Notov, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here.
All right. First, Michael, I'm going to not take my cue from the stock because you were on our program when the company had a $103 stock and the stock burst up. But what I do want to know is how have medical costs fared the first half of the year? And what are you seeing as a trend with medical costs?
The medical costs have been very stable. The trend continues to be stable. We commented today on our call, low single digits, as we have expected.
And what
have been very,
okay, well,
been and, very good.
And that would mean for, say, Fidelis, that if you come in with something that you talked about on the call and here, but I really need you to expound upon it, with better technology, you can make, if medical costs are stable, a lot more money than Fidelis has been able to do, given the fact that Fidelis was not really a company that was supposed to make a lot of money.
Well, if you look at Fidelis, we have said quite all along that we will be helping them with their medical management costs. As a result, some of their G&A will go up, SG&A, but the medical costs will come down, and it's not a cliff. It will take over the next two, three quarters, expected to start to come down at the New York plan.
What technology do you use, sir? What are the analytics that you referenced in the conference call that makes it so that you're so confident about this?
Oh, well, we have a case management that looks at everything that's been done, what's been ordered. It's electronic. It works with high-risk patients. They know how to do that. We have an interpreter that does predictive modeling that can say what could happen. It looks at 12 million cases and 12 million files in about 30 seconds, 60 seconds. So it manages high data, large data, as we like to talk about.
Well, one of the things that I wanted, why I brought that up, is because a lot of people are very excited about what Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett, and Jamie Dimon think they can do, try to keep healthcare costs down. I think you are the nation's premier company in keeping healthcare costs down. Why can't they just hire you?
Well, I think in the end, they're probably going to want some of our systems capability. But I'm glad they're doing it. It's a real disruptor. And I think the industry needs disruptors. And we're going to be one ourselves.
Well, you were very disruptive on this call talking about Obamacare exchanges and how you're very excited about how they're doing. I thought that they were going away. You're talking about making some money with them.
We're doing really well. And even today, all the confusion was over the risk adjustments, which people didn't take time to really understand. We had a great quarter. The risk adjustments worked. Obamacare is working. We're doing very well with it, and we're anticipating growing it.
Okay, now, you know our president, every time he talks about this, says that Obamacare is just a terrible failure. You just said that it's not. Can you please explain to me how a president could so disagree with someone who's in the field?
You know, I'm going to be very careful not to be specific about him, but I think just in general, we have moved from policy to politics. And if you look at what's the right healthcare policy for this population, the ACA works. And we've proven it. We've been doing this for 5 years. It's been very successful. It's at the top end of our margin range. We continue to grow it. High satisfaction. 80% the last 2 years have re-upped the following year.
Do you think that any of the restrictions that they've been putting on are going to make it so that's a less profitable business for you going forward?
I don't think so. I think they're doing everything they can to be disruptive of it. You know, they're cutting back the enrollment fees and what they're spending to get people enrolled. But this past year, we thought we were going to grow 100,000 lives, and we grew 500,000 lives.
Holy cow. Well, anyway, look, I want to congratulate you for another good quarter. I understand. Look, the stock ran a lot. Your quarter was terrific. Thank you so much to Michael Notov. He's the chairman and CEO of Centene CNC. I would use this decline to buy the stock. They have money's back after the break. Okay, 3M has been one of the worst stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. But I think after this quarter and going through the conference call that the stock has put in a bottom when it touched 190. Is it going to go straight back up to 250? Absolutely not. But can it really crater much from here? That's actually pretty hard to believe, given the fact they have such good organic growth now. Like I said, there's always bull market summer. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.